الفاميلي جات سندرو del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
My name is Michael Bailey and you're listening to the EDP Formula One Podcast. Good day to you all and welcome to Arch and Towers for the EDP F1 European Grand Prix podcast as we mull over a superb race in Valencia. Yes, you did indeed hear me right. Fernando Alonso fired his Ferrari from 11th on the grid to 25 points in the race. And we also had overtaking, retirements and prangs all in Spain. A Spanish driver winning his home race, although he does get two bites of the cherry, so that's probably cheating. Others had weekends to remember and forget. So it's time to chew over the cud of the race. I should introduce the panel we have here at Arch and Towers. Firstly, I have Perry Hamilton here, my regular. You well, Perry?
I'm very well indeed, Michael. I'm beaming after Valencia. It absolutely delivered.
That's the way. Kyle Cumbers is here too. Good afternoon, Kyle.
Good afternoon.
You well?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Good. Good to have you back. And John Luton's here too.
Hi.
Hello there, John.
Thanks for having me again.
Pleasure. We're regularly in and talking Formula One, shall we? Okay then. So yeah, as you said, Perry, have you got over the shock of seeing it looked resplendent, the street circuit, and it actually put on a race to match for once.
I think I am still in shock a little bit. This, to me, it's normally at this time of year you kind of face a void of good Formula One racing. You know, you watch it because it's on, that's that kind of thing, but you never really expect anything from it. And from not expecting anything from it to actually seeing what happened, and you kind of think, okay, that's one exciting thing, surely that's it, that's all I've got. And then, you know, more happens, and it just, I mean, I don't think anyone saw that whole podium shaking out the way it did. I mean, I will point out, I did see the man standing on top of it. I did predict Alonso, and I'm very pleased
you did,
to do so.
Yes.
Didn't look such a good prediction after Saturday, I won't lie. I thought, after qualifying, I thought I may have been a bit overzealous, but he proved me right. Rather than wrong, actually, which I thought was great. But yes, it was a cracking race.
Well, I mean, Valencia's had all kinds of criticism over the state of the circuit. You can't overtake on it. I think Jenson Button pretty much reiterated that, which was probably more his frustrations at qualifying. But I suppose Sunday, Kyle, just proved that it's more a case of the cars and the field being so close, that the tyres mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think with qualifying so close, I think a few cars were out of position. As in the past, I mean, Button probably made a slight mistake on his qualifying, and that pushed him all the way back.
Webber too, of course, was out in Q1.
Yeah, and I think sort of the qualifying was so close that shuffled up the pack. I was still slightly worried that the tyres are having a too big an impact. But I'd rather have that race than, say, 2 years ago on the Bridgestones, which was, you know.
Or every other race at Valencia,
yeah.
Probably. I mean, as I said last time out, I'm probably not the biggest fan of Q2. I almost thought it was irrelevant, I think I labelled it. Whereas actually, Q2 on Saturday was fantastic. I mean, it was, what, three tenths of a second?
Three tenths between the top 13, I believe.
Which is so ridiculous.
I think it made it more exciting, because sometimes qualifying, there isn't really, that you kind of know which 10 cars are going to get into the final qualifying session. But this time, that was more exciting because of it was so close and you weren't sure who was going to be knocked out. And in the end, it was the two Ferraris and Schumacher, who, you know, Mercedes usually looked fast on them kind of tracks this year. So it was a bit shocking. But then, you know, the fire then coming onto the race, it kind of made so much difference with the faster paced cars being a bit further back.
Yeah, absolutely it did. Talking of the race, I mean, Fernando was kind of helped out for. I've actually got a guy staying with me at home at the moment, a little lodger. He's not little, but he's a lodger. He's from Oviedo, so he's from Fernando Alonso's hometown. There we go. That's a little bit of factoid for
he
you.
He must have definitely enjoyed the weekend.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did. Yeah, and I've also got. I have to refer to Lewis Hamilton with his Spanish pronunciation for the rest of this podcast. So you can wait and have that one in a minute. Just you know, hold your horses. But we'll get there. But Fernando, I mean, the first guy to win two races this year, and we're at round eight, so that's fairly ridiculous in itself. And he's got a bit of a healthy 20-point gap at the top of the championship standings now as well. So is he favourite? Are we happy to call him championship favourite now?
I think at the start of the season, I three races in, I thought Alonso, this could be his year, because everybody came out and said Ferrari was rubbish and dreadful car. And
it
was still
terrible, didn't it, in those first races?
Yeah, but he was sort of still there, and you kind of had the feeling that if they get it sorted, that could be his year. But I mean, next race, it'll change. And is he due a non-finish? He's got this record of 20 finishes in the points.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Is he due a non-finish?
There you go.
You never know.
Right, I'm off, Carl. what do you think, Perry?
I think at the moment, I don't think you could put anyone as favourite. I mean, if we're talking, you know, genuine odds makers favourites, I haven't actually checked, but I can't imagine that there's that much of a difference between if you were to put a bet on Hamilton or a bet on Alonso to win the championship. I can't imagine that there's going to be a huge split there. I mean, let's be honest, if as Kyle's looked in his crystal ball and said, you know, there's a DNF coming up in Alonso's future, and let's say that, I don't know, Hamilton manages to bring it home at the next race, that's Alonso's lead gone. He's suddenly, and you know, with other people finishing on the podiums and the points that are available, it wouldn't be surprising to see Alonso sitting fourth, maybe even, you know, fifth in the championship with that. That's just the way the points fall, since they've added the increased points system that they introduced to make it more exciting. You just don't know. But ignoring odds makers, because that's not how races are won. Races are won on the track, and on the track, Fernando Alonso has looked dominant recently, which to me is a really good sign for Ferrari. If they can make the relevant improvements to that car, and it's a good sign to fans of Fernando Alonso. So I wouldn't bet against him.
I love watching him as a racer. There's a handful of drivers that you love watching, and he's certainly one. This is probably the best thing about the championship, and why I can't understand anyone criticising Formula One in 2012, John. The fact that you have anyone effectively within reason can win a race, and the championship is rewarding the drivers who have consistent finishes at the same time. I mean, it's the best of both worlds, surely.
Yeah, I think it's good to see. I mean, Alonso is the only person who's actually finished in the points at every single race so far this season, which, you know, makes a huge difference and shows that the consistency, even though the Ferrari car has been deemed to be not as good as past years, it shows that it's all about consistency rather than having the best car. It's about being a good driver and that. I mean, the other thing that you have to recognise as well is that Mark Webber, who I don't think really has done that much this season or seems to have done much, has suddenly ended up in second position in the championship. So there's always a possibility that he could come good, you know, a bit later on the season, and he's in with a chance of the championship, which I don't think anyone's really mentioning Webber as a proper championship contender at the moment.
I like the fact that he was level or maybe just a point or two behind Vettel a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of races ago, and it was on my list to get to, John, definitely, but I would love it if Mark Webber was in with a proper shout of the championship, most definitely. Which should probably brings us on quite nicely to Red Bull. I mean, to be honest, it looked like Sebastian Vettel's race, he was dominant in qualifying. I mean, he just pulled out basically half a second on everyone else without anyone expecting it. The race, he looked supremely in control until we had the safety car. I mean, he looked very good. Alternator failure, we believe, I think, according to Autosport, anyway. An alternator failure on his Renault engine and Romain Grosjean's Lotus, the Renault engine in that car. I mean, both were probably shoo-ins for race wins when they ended up disappearing on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we saw it coming. Grosjean looked in control. I have to say, I had no doubt when that safety car came out and everyone was backed up and it came to the restart, you could literally see Grosjean as a little fish being followed by a massive shark. Alonso was right behind him on his gearbox, and not even for a second did I sit there and think Grosjean will fend him off.
Did you not?
No, not for a second. I genuinely thought, you don't know who's behind you. He's very good at coming out of those restarts, as Schumacher used to be, very good at coming out of those restarts from a safety car, and there was no doubt that he was going to absolutely obliterate him. But I did think he was in with a shot for a podium at least.
I mean, it was nice to see a car actually keep close enough to Vettel from after a safety car, because normally he's off in the distance before they actually cross the line, isn't he? But maybe Grosjean was concentrating too much on staying with Vettel and and then forgot who was behind him. But I mean, Vettel was in front when his engine died. I think Grosjean was he second to,
he was in second,
was second, he was second to Alonso. When his engine, I mean, it's rare that you have such kind of reliability issues in a way, isn't it?
I think Red Bull used to, a couple of years ago, have a dreadful reliability issue, because I think Vettel would have probably won the championship a couple of years, you know, the year before he actually did, if it wasn't for, you know, having quite a few problems with engine reliability. And Grosjean as well was actually, I was thinking that it would be good if Grosjean would be, you know, the next person to be the third, you know, another new winner of a race this season would have just made it even more exciting. And, you know, you have to kind of feel sorry for both drivers in a sense, because of, it wasn't anything to do with their driving. It wasn't a fault, you know, of any member of the team. It was just, you know, a problem that occasionally, you know, comes up, and it's just a coincidence that both of them had it in the same race with the same engine.
Absolutely. And Renault did apologise to both teams for the problems, which I'm sure they'll get to the bottom of. Hey, Carl. A couple of other talking points from the race. Final two laps, I think it was, when Hamilton's and his rather ruined tyres, he was trying to keep Pastor Maldonado behind him, and almost rather inevitably, as it played out, Pastor kind of got ran off the road, and rather than maybe taking stock, decided just to drive into the side of Lewis Hamilton. There you go. That was worth it, wasn't it? I know that was worth it. And that sent Lewis out of the race, and Pastor finished, I think it was 10th, before he then got given a post-race drive-through, which sent him rightly out of the points down to 12th. Pastor again, Kyle. I've almost bored of saying it, but he came out of it thinking it was Lewis's fault,
yes,
because he should have gone out of the way and he was being too aggressive.
The problem he had, he was off the track. And to come back on the track and then hit somebody doesn't look too good, does it? So at the time, as a Hamilton fan, I wish Hamilton gave him a bit more room, especially as it is Maldonado, but with a lap to go, you can't expect anybody to just to give up the space, and especially Lewis Hamilton. But I think it's just Maldonado, he's sort of the red mist comes down, and he could have waited another couple of corners. And I mean, Hamilton was struggling so badly when a bit of the bridge, and he could hardly get over the bridge. But it was quite scary how quickly the tyres went off, because sort of before that it wasn't quick. I mean, he was struggling all day really, but it just went like that. And I mean, it's like it's happened to Raikkonen early on. It's just, it could happen to anybody, it looks.
It's the old yeah, cliff, wasn't
yeah
it? The old cliff arrived. In the end, I think there was Lewis's frustration. I'm going to keep doing this, by the way. His frustration was clear, wasn't it? I mean, the steering wheel went a few yards up the road.
I think the good thing, though, is that from Lewis's point, was that as soon as he went to the press conference and to speak to people, he didn't blame anyone. He just, you know, last year he would have gone straight for it and been having a go, but this year he's kind of a bit more calm and mellow, and it was a bit more sensible with what he said. I have to say, in the race at proper speed, I actually originally thought it was Lewis's fault, but then it was only when you actually see the replays that you saw that, you know, Maldonado was actually off the track. But I know Lewis is a racer, but I kind of think sometimes he knew his tyres were going off. He knew that realistically Maldonado was going to get past him at some point, so he needs to take some of the responsibility that maybe he should have either given him more room or just been a bit more sensible, because at the end of the day, Lewis managed to lose points because of that. So it's sometimes better to, you know, let the person get past you or give them a bit more room and get some points, rather than them taking you out and ending up with nothing.
Takes two to tango.
Well, I see where you're coming from with that, but at the same time, you've got to remember, I mean, Lewis's tyres, they'd hit the cliff Now, for him to give Pastor Maldonado a bit more room, he's got to go off the racing line. Yeah. He goes off the racing line, he picks up those marbles, he picks up that dust. Who's to say he doesn't lose the back end anyway? There's not a lot of grip left in those tyres. He's got every right, as a driver in the position that he's in, to stick to that racing line. And as Kyle quite rightly said, Maldonado only had to wait, one, two more corners? There's no doubt he would have got him the next straight, the next sweeping, right? Could have taken him on the outside of any number of corners. Yes, I see what you're saying about, just being aware and giving everyone room, but do you really know? I mean, I know they're in constant radio communication, but for all we know, Lewis, who, as we figured out, is in constant contact with his pit crew throughout the race, probably more to his annoyance than anything else. For all we know, they were saying to him, whatever you do, Lewis, don't let Pastor pass. It's one lap. We can keep him behind. Just make the car as wide as possible. So it's not always going to be Lewis's fault. And I don't think that Lewis would ever react well to anyone saying, OK, just give up the place, because that's the safe play to do. We know Lewis can keep people behind him. And I think it's just a lack of maturity. There's that M word when we keep talking about Maldonado. It's that lack of experience and that lack of maturity that just made him think, I'm coming back on the track here, get out of my way. And I don't think that's gone well for him at all.
Well, Lewis has only just got that maturity, so I suppose maybe Pastor has a few years to catch up with that. Paul de Resta had a really strong weekend for Force India, I thought, and he did finish ahead of Jenson Button, who copied Lewis's setup. and obviously it worked wonders for him, certainly compared to the last couple of races. Michael Schumacher, Kimi Raikkonen was second on the podium. I can't remember if it's his second or third second place, but it's certainly a handful now of podium finishes for Kimi Raikkonen on his return to Formula One with Lotus. Michael Schumacher, his return's been going on a little bit longer, but it was his first podium since being back, I believe, which I hope I've got right. It's almost been one extreme to the other. For Shumi, hasn't it, this season? Were any of us happy to see him on the podium? I've been sort of, looking forward to it for a while, but
I think it was good to see him do it the way that he did, as in he came from the back and he worked his way through the field, and there was just him and Webber following each other pretty much around the track for probably half the race, just taking, as many people as they can one by one until they got up to there. And there was a bit of luck obviously involved with, a lot of the people in front of them had tyres go off. There was the Lewis Hamilton Maldonado incident. There was Vettel and Grosjean. So in a sense, it was a bit more of luck coming to play rather than, an absolutely amazing drive. But then, he came from, I think half the race he was outside the top 10. So he did keep on pushing. And I think it's that kind of like never say die attitude of Michael Schumacher, which is I'm just going to try and get as far forward as I can, and a bit of luck kind of played into it, so it was good to see him back on there.
Yeah, I agree. He was certainly due a good finish. So far he's had so many retirements and not all of them have been his fault. A few glaring ones have been. But yeah, I mean, if you keep it on the track when a lot of people can't, and if your car stays healthy when a lot of other people's don't, and you've got the driving ability that Schumacher has, I see no reason why he shouldn't be on the podium. I'm not his biggest fan, just in general, but you cannot fault his drive over the weekend, so he certainly deserved to be up there.
Cracking stuff. Let's get on to Caterham, shall we? Our home team, if you like, alongside Lotus. I'd probably argue it's Caterham's best weekend since they came onto the Formula One scene. Overall, Vitaly Petrov finished 13th and Heikki Kovalainen was 14th. Heikki also took his Caterham into Q2 and qualified ahead of both Toro Rossos, genuinely racing with them, genuinely on pace, out qualifying them. They had several updates at Valencia and a load more coming at Silverstone for the British Grand Prix in a couple of weeks. But for a couple of collisions that weren't really their fault on race day, they probably weren't a million miles away from the top 10, certainly compared to everything that's gone before. Genuine signs of encouragement, Kyle? Genuine?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like I said, in qualifying they proved. I mean, Kovalainen, like I said, I qualified at Toro Rossos, and race pace they looked quick, and I think Kovalainen had a curse problem as well in the race. So he yeah, I mean, Petrov was running 10th at one point as well, so I don't know if Toro Rosso have fallen back or Caterham have catched him up, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they seem a distant sort of HRT and Marussia behind him. So I think there's signs they can maybe get a point this year.
I think there's no doubt, while the rest of the midfield has kept pace or closed in on the leaders, that Toro Rosso are slipping behind. I think that's fairly reasonable to say. How do you see it, John? Is that gap closing?
Can
get excited?
I think Caterham are going to be, give it another year or so and a bit more development, hopefully a bit more money from that they're going to get. Now they're getting some more airtime on TV, they're going to get more sponsorship, they're going to get more money, and therefore there'll be more development. And you can see probably they will be, give it another season or two, they'll be firmly into the midfield of teams. But then there's always the people at the front of the midfield of teams now are, you know, the Lotuses and Force Indias are forcing their way up with the top teams. So there's always, I think they're always going to be quite off the pack, but, you know, there's improvements there. And that's all you can really ask of a team in their position, is to just keep on doing the improvements and hope that they can improve more than the couple of teams ahead of them.
It is. It's not improving. It's just improving more than everyone else, really, isn't it? It's all comparative. The two clashes, which I'll probably have to remind myself of, I know that Jean-Eric Verne clashed with Keiki, which is a fairly schoolboy error, bearing in mind he'd already overtaken him and then drove into his front wing. I mean, we'd all assume that it was Heike's fault because the front of his car was damaged, but apparently not. I mean, they will be frustrating moments for Caterham, won't they, being on receiving end and things like that.
Yeah, but the best thing that you see about it is they've got a real never-say-die attitude. I mentioned previously that what I'm enjoying seeing out of Heikki Kovalainen now is that he's got a real love of the drive. He's really enjoying actually being out there and you know, putting the car around the track, whereas because there's not a lot of pressure. And I think even now people still talk about Caterham as backmarkers, but I mean, they've shown what they can do this race, and that's, you know, Valencia is not known as a track where you can go particularly fast and you can get round people. So they've done really well there. I mean, I actually cheered out loud, just me, watching the qualifying, and when Heikki put it into Q2, I cheered out loud. And I was even more impressed with the fact that he put a run in, because you could have easily expected him just to sit back and go, all right, well, you know, we're going to sit here at 16th and we're going to save our tyres and whatever. But no, he put a run in, qualified ahead of Ricciardo. Absolutely fantastic performance from them. And during the race, a couple of clashes here and there, some prangs, may have taken them a place or two, may have not taken them a place or two, because, you know, in race pace at least, some of the cars that were behind them are genuinely faster. But the drivers are showing a maturity and they're growing into the car as the car's growing into them as well. You're seeing some real connection there, which I think is great.
It was a great weekend for Vitaly, which is actually finishing ahead of Heikki. That was by far and away his best result of the season, and Caterham's second 13th place finish of the season. So I don't think they're going to be troubled by Marussia or HRT from here on in this season. And 10th place again, I would put your money on that now. Right, okay, highlight of the race, then we'll have a driver and team of the weekend, shall we? So just a quick one, gents. Kyle, your highlight.
I think it must be Alonso's overtake of Grosjean after the safety car. I mean, yeah, it was also the main part of the race which led on to his win, really. So
absolutely,
yeah, that's really got to be my highlight of the race.
Nice and sharp.
Yeah.
Nice and sharp. John?
For me, it's also another Alonso overtake, but into the second corner when he overtook Webber, because I just thought Webber probably didn't see that coming at all. And, you know, to be halfway down the field and then to have Alonso come out of the pits and just go and just take you in a corner where not many overtakes usually happen, I think that was just kind of stunning bravery from Alonso.
Yeah, sure. Grosjean had a great overtake at the start as well, I thought.
My highlight, very simple, 2.9 seconds. 2.9 seconds of that Grand Prix was the best for me, and that was the 2.9 seconds that Hamilton was stationary in the pits for the best McLaren pit stop of the season. And what a pit stop. I mean, we laugh that a highlight is a pit stop, but let's look at the trouble that McLaren have had throughout their season with their pit stops. It's cost them races, there's no doubt about that. It's cost them podiums, it's possibly even cost them wins. That was the single greatest pit stop I've ever seen. And that, considering the troubles they've had, they had a dodgy pit stop later in the race as well, which may kind of have eradicated that. But at the same time, that performance, 2.9 seconds, absolutely incredible. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I must admit, I just couldn't help cheering when Vettel pulled over. It's terrible. the race looked so dull. It looked all his until that point. So that was the highlight because I think it opened it up. So there we go. Driver and team of the weekend. I'm going to start with John this time.
Driver, I'll have to say Alonso. Team is a bit harder because of Ferrari. You had one end of the spectrum with Alonso, and you had Massa, who seemed to be doing okay. And then obviously you got his front wing taken off, and then, you know, he ended up back in, where'd he end? He ended up 16th place in the end, so a long way back. So team, I have to probably say Force India. They were very consistent. They did really well, and you know, they're showing that they're coming on leaps and bounds.
Yeah, Hulkenberg had a good weekend, actually. That's very true. Kyle?
I'll go Hulkenberg as my driver today. I mean, he's sort of been living in the rest of his shadow sort of quite a lot of the season, and it was good for him to come through. I think it's his best finish as well, I think fifth. So
sounds about right.
Yeah. I was also going to Force India as team of the day, but I'll change it. I'll go Caterham, I think, as we spoke about earlier.
Fantastic. Yeah. We know that gets a smile in these parts. Perry?
Driver of the weekend was Webber. Went out in Q1 and finished fourth.
He did.
Flawless drive, sitting second in the championship. And as you said, does it all under the radar. Does it all very calmly, very quietly, negotiated his way through many prangs and hits and things, you know, used the safety car to his advantage. It was absolutely great. Team of the weekend, I originally as well thought Force India, so I think that's a unanimous Force India from us there. But as a backup, I'm actually going to go Mercedes. Two drivers finished in the top 10. You got Rosberg sitting sixth, and obviously Schumi making his first podium of this season at least, and they did very well. They thought the track would suit them, and you know, it wasn't what they'd like, you know, ideally, but it was good. And so Mercedes would be my fallback team of the week.
That's a fine plan B. There's no problem with that at all. Okay, as Formula One was back in Europe, it was also a GP2 weekend in Valencia. So we'll have a little roundup of our Norfolk teams. Marcus Ericsson provided the main Norfolk highlight. He had a podium finish in Saturday's feature race for Carlton Road-based iSport International. Hethel-backed Lotus GP saw Esteban Gutierrez bring home the win. Ericsson's teammate Jolyon Palmer, who of course won the sprint race in Monaco, he left with a pair of DNFs after early collisions. So not the best weekend or follow-up for old Jolyon there. Sadly, Ericsson also suffered a bit of a prang on the Sunday too, and his race ended early. iSport, however, do close in on Hingham's Caterham Racing in the team's championship, and Ericsson is now eighth in the driver's standings. It was his third healthy points finish in four races on Saturday. Of Caterham, Guido van der Garde had to settle for a best of sixth in the Sunday sprint race, and his teammate, our very own Attleboro Venezuelan Rodolfo Gonzalez, one of the nicest guys you'll meet as well, he sadly failed to trouble the point scorers in either race. Gutierrez Lotus teammate James Calado finished second on Sunday, and that actually sent the French-based team top of the team's championship, and Calado is third in the driver's standings. A little interesting point of note is that Davide Valsecchi and Luis Razia are first and second in the driver's standings, both of whom were driving for Caterham Racing last year, and I know for a fact weren't doing what they were doing this year, so there we go. The GP2 teams will now look ahead to Silverstone, which is the first weekend of July, as of course will all the Formula One teams. It's the British Grand Prix, the marquee sporting event for this country in terms of motorsport, and I think at that point we will do another preview podcast soon. So that leaves me to say thank you to Perry, John and Kyle for their contributions. Now, don't forget, you can follow all the news and action regarding Lotus and Caterham throughout the season at edp24.co.uk/F1. You can also read my weekly EDP column, which runs in the paper every Wednesday. Any comments or questions, you can get in touch with us here at the podcast via Twitter, My handle is at Michael J. Bailey. Perry?
I am at PedHD56.
Kyle?
I'm at K. Cumbers.
And John?
And I'm at John Luton.
There we go. We are also now on iTunes. You can subscribe, download, do what you do. This very podcast is there, or will be there, as will all the back issues. You can just search EDP Formula One podcast in the iTunes store or visit edp24.co.uk/F1podcast. Thanks, as always, to all my panel and for you for listening. And we will be back next week to look ahead to the big one at Silverstone. Goodbye for now.